You're listening to Sacks in the Basement, a production of the Broadcast Basement Limited, where every show is 30 minutes of good and comes from a basement bar on the south side of Chicago. Pull up a stool, pour a cold one, and join us right now for Sacks in the Basement. Heard everywhere podcasts can be found, and always at sacksinthebasement.com. I'm riding solo here at the 9-Foot Homemade Oak Bar for this episode. My name is Chris Lanuti. Ed is off. We just couldn't get it done. Had a little bit of an emergency this week in the Lanuti house. My daughter wakes me up the other morning, 6 a.m. Dad, I think I'm in trouble. And after a very quick look at what was going on and listening to where the pain was, it was obvious to me she had an appendicitis. And we got her over to Christ Hospital on the south side. They did some quick tests, and they had to do the emergency appendectomy. She's resting now, but I've been a caretaker because they just send you home after they take an organ out of you. Like the surgeon comes out, and he goes, Mr. Lanuti, she's doing well. The appendix is in a bucket now. We don't need to worry about it. Oh, that's good. Is she resting? Yeah, we're closing her up right now. She should be good to go home in about 2 hours. You know, I understand that everybody needs beds and medicine has changed a lot in the last 20 or 30 years, but I think it's pretty crazy that they send people home just a couple hours after an organ has been pulled from their body. And so it's not like she gets better quicker. It still takes as long as it did 20 years ago to get better after somebody cuts a hole in you. It's just, I'm taking care of her. So this is the first chance I've had in a couple of days to sit in front of a microphone, and I could not make Ed have to wait until midnight on Friday night after I finally was able to sit here with an energy drink at the bar. I'm not even cracking a cold one tonight. Energy drink so I can get through this show. I didn't want to cancel the show, though, because there were so many interesting things that happened over the last couple days with the White Sox, and I wanted to make sure I got to them with you. And I also wanted to make sure the Sox nerd got his weekly thing in, and we're going to spend a little bit of extra time with him later on in this program as he gets ready. I want to hear a little bit about what it's like getting ready for the season, because remember, when you go to the ball game, you're going to see all of his stuff, all of his tidbits, all of his knowledge, a lot of the stuff that he tries out here on this show up on the scoreboard in game throughout the year. This episode of Sacks in the Basement and every episode of Sacks in the Basement brought to you by Cork and Carry at the Park in the shadow of the ballpark at 33rd and Princeton, the official home of Sacks in the Basement and your home for pregame, postgame, and in-game, and the place to be. And I think this team is actually going to play better and have a better record this year. In fact, I'm sure they're going to have a better record this year than what they had last year. And I think you're going to have a lot of fun at the ballpark because I think you're going to have a team that is going to go about it in a better way. I don't know how many more wins that translates into. I don't think that gets you into the postseason, but, you know, you can catch lightning in a bottle. My father is getting excited. You know, old white guys love defense, and they love small ball, and he's really excited about it. And it's fine. He's excited about it. I think it's great. You know, he's like, who knows? You know, if this happens and that happens and this happens, we could make a playoff push. And I'm like, Dad, I want you to be positive. Right? I want positivity. I love positivity. I don't feel the same way he does, but I'll leave myself open to it. So all year long, when you're going to the ballpark, stop by Cork and Carry at the park at 33rd and Princeton. Right now, you should be getting over there to 33rd and Princeton to register for free for that trip to Hawaii. The drawing is on March the 15th. We are just days away. You can also register at the original location at 106th and Western, and that's exactly where I will be at 106th and Western. This coming Sunday, March 17th, for the Southside Irish Parade. Cork and Carry is the epicenter of that parade. It always has been. It is the historical place to be, and it is the biggest party on Parade Day. And Parade Day falls on St. Patrick's Day. It's going to be a beautiful day. I will see you at the Cork. We will be there. The first thing I want to talk about was something I saw on a broadcast just a couple of days ago. And Chuck was on there, pushing the sunshine and the hope, which I think draws Dad in and a lot of fans. And look, again, I at least like the way they're going about their business. I don't know how sure I am it's going to turn into wins. But I do like the idea of we're going to have a different kind of structure and a different way of playing. I do like some of the aggression I'm seeing on the base paths. I do like, even though there's been a couple of errors, it hasn't been perfect out there in the field. That's what spring training is for. I can tell we're going to play the game a little bit differently. I saw Dominic Fletcher beat out an infield hit. And it wasn't that deep in the hole, it's short, to drive Yoán Moncada the other day. Now, it was Gavin Lux making the play, and he just lost his shortstop job to Mookie Betts, who was an outfielder, became a second baseman for the Dodgers, and now he's at the premier spot playing short. And when they asked Dave Roberts how long Gavin Lux was going to be playing second instead of short and how long Mookie's going to be at shortstop, he basically said it's permanent until I tell you otherwise. So who knows, maybe Dominic Fletcher hustling in spring training, trying to make a team, you know, this new White Sox way of actually trying hard. Like maybe that got Gavin Lux sent over to second base. I don't know. It was probably one of the factors, but I enjoyed the White Sox side of it, seeing a guy hustle in a game that technically doesn't mean very much at all. And it shows me that's how they're going to create runs. I see a lot of run creation, a lot of taking the extra base. And you know, it's fun right now. I wonder how often we'll see it when it's games that matter and everybody has their best 26 out there and their best starting nine day to day. But it is fun to imagine the possibilities. But anyway, Danny Mendick standing at second base. Broadcast team is, you know, doing their thing. Chuck's on there giving tidbits. Everything's rosy. Everything's happy. Everything's sunny. They're in Arizona. It's spring training. Hope springs eternal. The story that was getting pushed, and I love the story, I'm not poo-pooing the story, is that Danny Mendick was asked the difference between this team and the team that he left just 2 years ago. And remember, the team that he left 2 years ago was a Tony La Russa team in which the entirety of the White Sox told us was going to be a team that was going back to the playoffs and was going to go deep into the postseason. You know, talk to Rick Hahn after the parade. Like, that team, they were at least telling us to hope. We could see early on that it wasn't going to work. I think most of us fans saw that. I think we peaked when Leury Garcia hit that home run in game three. Actually, the peak might have been the year before in the shortened season. Like, it was not going well 2 years ago when Mendick got hurt, wasn't on the team anymore. They let him go. He ends up over with the Mets, and now he's back. And during the story, it was really interesting. Like, Danny has a ball hit to him that it looks like it's like 3 feet over his head. He does full extension in the middle of the story and just snags it. Again, throwing the leather out there. I love it. And again, I think that's why he's going to make this team. I think he's one of many non-roster invitees that are going to make this team. But the story goes that 2 years ago, and this is the thing I really heard in it, 2 years ago, nobody hung out with each other. Nobody went to dinner with each other. Maybe two guys liked each other on the team. The impression that's given in the story is that there's so many little miniature camps. The team is not hanging out with each other. It's fractured inside of the clubhouse. And now Danny's describing that it's completely different. Now it's like 12 guys are going out to dinner every night. Now, that gives me rosy feelings, right? It also confirms how I felt about that team with La Russa as the manager. I think we all kind of felt like that was a really fractured clubhouse. And that he may have done great things in his career. He may be a Hall of Fame manager. I'm not taking away his accolades and what he had done, but his last run with the White Sox was one run too many in his managerial career. And that clubhouse was a mess. Now, they would have never have admitted that to you on television. They would have never talked about that on state media, on the network that Jerry Reinsdorf has majority ownership in back when it was happening. But now it's the setup to a positive story. And that's how you always learn about the White Sox, right? Like, at the time, you have your idea of what's really going on, but they're never going to tell you. You got to wait a couple of years. And then when they're telling you something positive about what's happening right then and there, you'll hear the thing from 2 years ago about how nobody was getting along. Right? Like, if you've ever known anybody in your life who's a habitual liar, they're generally pretty good at it. I've come across those in my life. Sometimes it's hard to find out where the truth is. But the problem with the habitual liar is eventually, or the person that covers things up, or the person that isn't 100% forthright with you, eventually, when they're telling another story, you'll hear the truth. And the truth is that that was not a good locker room. I mean, that's what I took from that story. Nobody was hanging out with each other. Nobody wanted to go get dinner with each other. Like, that's the thing that Danny sees that's different. Because now that Mendick's back, everybody's getting together. You're supposed to focus on the everybody's getting together, and since they eat with each other, they're going to inherently be better at baseball. I don't know if that's true, but there were so many problems with that team under La Russa, and that was clearly one of them. So I'm glad that's at least fixed. You know, they don't all have to go out and hold hands, though. They don't have to sing Kumbaya and hang around the campfire together. Their wives shouldn't all be just getting together to have, you know, wind down Wednesday to watch a ball game and everybody's babysitting each other's kids. They don't need to be the best of friends. Just like they don't all need to be great people. That's never been the thing for me. I just want wins. But it is nice to hear. It's also kind of interesting that it validates the feelings that I think a lot of us had about the White Sox a couple of years ago. And if I'm going to take any positivity out of this spring training, it's different. It's very different now on the White Sox. Sox in the Basement listeners, for exterior windows, doors, patio doors, and storm doors, look no further than Window and Door Superstore of Oak Forest. No high-pressure sales. A lot of window companies, I worked for one years ago. Like right out of radio, I went to work for this place. I'm working for this guy, and I got a little taste of what it was like to go door-to-door with window samples. And yeah, it's uncomfortable for the sales guy. You got this dingy, crappy window that's fallen apart in his trunk. It's been in everybody's house, right? And now all of a sudden it's sitting on your kitchen table. Like, I imagine the people that I was showing the windows to, like, fumigating anything that my materials touched after I came in there and told them, here's the deal, but if I leave, I don't know if I'll be able to get a better one because my boss said it was, like, today only. You don't want to deal with people like that when you're spending that much money and doing something that big to your home. Instead, go into the showroom, see everything they have, speak to an owner. They're there in the showroom. There's going to be one on site along with their own installers. They don't farm out the work. They've been in Oak Forest since 1985 with all major brands custom made. Stop in and see them today. Half block east of 159th and Ridgeland at 6280 159th Street. Window and Door Superstore of Oak Forest. See more at windowdooroakforest.com. With me right now, the Sox nerd, Dave Marin. He puts up all the interesting tidbits on the scoreboard throughout the season, which is approaching quickly, and he joins us here on Sox in the Basement each and every week. Nerd, what do you got for me?
Chris, let's continue to dump out the old Sox nerd tidbit bag this week. Some of these nuggets may end up on the board this season, and some of them may not. Dominic Fletcher, the outfielder acquired from Arizona last month, is 5'6" tall. The White Sox have only had one player shorter than that in their 123-year history, and his tenure with the team was, well, short. On September 1st, 1923, 18-year-old Jess Cortazzo, measuring all of 5'3", grounded out as a pinch hitter for Hall of Fame pitcher Red Faber in a 14-6 win over Cleveland at Comiskey Park. It was Cortazzo's long big league plate appearance, but it was enough to make him one of just 21 players 5'3 or shorter to play in the bigs. Once he appears in a game, Fletcher will become the 14th player measuring 5'6 to play for the Sox, and the first since Chad Bonville got into nine games in 1997. By the way, Walt No Neck Williams is the Sox career leader among players 5'6" tall with 20 home runs. Speaking of No Neck, if Fletcher starts on opening day, he will be the first 5'6" Sox player to start in a season premiere since Williams in 1972. Should Andrew Vaughn hit 15 home runs in 2024, he will become just the fourth player in Sox history to reach that plateau in each of his first four major league seasons. The only other Sox players to do that are Jose Abreu, Carlos Lee, and Alexei Ramirez. Pitcher Matt Foster was recently placed on the 60-day injured list for the second time. I'm going to miss him solely for his unparalleled interleague prowess. Foster, who hasn't pitched since 2022, is unscored upon in 20 and one-third interleague innings. No pitcher in big league history has that many scoreless innings in interleague play. I bring this up now because I don't know if I will ever have need for this stat again. Before I get to my zinger, I remind you that pearls like these and others can be found on my blog at socksinthebasement.com. My zinger? Nicky Lopez is on track to start at second base for the White Sox on opening day. Should Naperville Nicky do that, he will join Springfield's Tim Hewlett, Posen's Don Colloway, and Chicago's Roy Schalk as the only Illinois natives to open the season at second base. The last Illinois-born player to start on opening day for the White Sox was the great Jim Thome in 2009. That's it, Chris. Probably more than you wanted to know about short people, no neck, especially Matt Foster and Naperville Nicky.
The Sox nerd Dave Marin is brought to you proudly by the Village of Lamont. Want to experience a downtown with real history, great eats and drinks, and green spaces filled with adventure? Visit the Village of Lamont. Shop, dine, drink, explore, and see everything they have going on this weekend and beyond at lamontdowntown.com. As I'm flying solo today, I figured I'd have you hang out for a moment, nerd. I am curious as to what you're doing right now to get ready for the start of a brand new season.
Well, right now I'm just culling information and facts and tidbits on White Sox players and then the first two teams from the first homestand. That would be the Detroit Tigers and Atlanta Braves. And I'm deciding which ones that are going to be used for as like my statistical base for the whole season. And I input them on a sheet and I save them and keep going and going. So it's quite a laborious process. I'm part writer, part editor, and I love it. I mean, because I really get to know the players. You know, a lot of the stuff that I'm using with you and Socks in the Basement is stuff that will end up on the board from time to time. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that I like to do is, you know, the nitty-gritty stat stuff, which is great, the situational stuff. But I also like to delve into stuff such as, you know, Nicky Lopez and the Illinois ties and Dominic Fletcher. And when I found out he was 5'6", I found that to be really fascinating. And I try to look for little, like, streams of statistics, like that Andrew Vaughn one where he's reached 15 homers. It could be the fourth time that he does that. And try to link these current crop of Sox players to the great and glorious past of the Sox. So, and you know, it's also kind of funny too, is I know people really don't pay much attention to these spring training games, but early in the season, you know, you can find a couple of good spring training nuggets that you put up on the board in April that really are interesting. And the one that I point to is I'll run that Ohtani one with Crochet striking him out. I'll run that a lot in early April because, you know, it's just kind of an interesting thing. And then once the season goes, I kind of throw out the spring training stats. So that's a long-winded answer for saying, like, I'm just really just digging around for information.
Well, and I would think that you have to look at what's going on in terms of the formation of the team this year. Like, you know who's going to be new. So that's got to be fun because you got a bunch of guys that are new and you're like, oh, this is like a brand new pool to dive into. But then you're also probably trying to figure out who realistically is making the team because you don't want to do a ton of work on a guy that ain't going to make it. So you're probably sitting there going, okay, well, who do I really think is going to make the team? And we may have a lot of non-roster invites like actually making this team. Right now, Danny Mendick looks like he's got an inside track. It looks like Mike Moustakas could make this team. It looks like Kevin Pillar is going to make this team. You're going to have a brand new right fielder and Dominic Fletcher. And then you have other guys that, you know, they're not eliminated yet. So I'm curious, like, are you already starting to separate out the guys that you're pretty sure are going to make it? And you're kind of like, we'll work on that guy if he surprises and makes the team?
I'll probably build most of the players because, you know, last year the Sox used a record amount of players and, you know, guys are constantly coming up between, you know, the minors and the Sox or whatever. So I will try to just build a base on everyone, just try to get something on everyone because, you know, a lot of times you'll walk into to start your day and they'll say, and there's a roster move and you don't want to be caught completely unprepared. So probably most of the guys on the, how many guys are in camp now? 75. I'll have at least something on just in case they're called up, I will have something. But yes, you're right. I mean, there's a base of players that I will focus on and try to get as much information on as possible.
I would also, if I were you, I would also be keeping track of stats that have to do with Michael Kopech, difference between the bullpen and the starting rotation, because I'm starting to think there's a possibility he, even if he ends up starting in the starting rotation, could be in the bullpen before this year is more than halfway done. And like the comparisons of numbers for Crochet in one role and another role, because you might see him in multiple roles as well.
I love those splits. I dig into them here on Sox in the Basement, and then a lot of times they'll end up on the scoreboard, particularly the starting versus relieving and things of that nature. If Kopech has had a really good outing in relief in the past, you know, I like to put that up there just to show that he's had success. So yes, splits are something that I definitely delve into a lot during the season.
Is there anything new before I let you go? Have you heard anything? Anything new, different graphics, different updates? Is it going to look basically the same this year, or is that something you're going to find out a little bit closer to opening day?
That's something we're going to find out as we move forward, but I can tell you this much, it's going to be great.
That's the Sox Nerd, Dave Maron. We'll check in with you again next week, buddy.
Can't wait.
Thank you very much to the Sox Nerd. Here's the deal, folks. When you combine State Farm, home and auto insurance, you save an average of $889. State Farm agent John Harrell is ready to help you combine home and auto and save in the Chicagoland area. John's a great guy. Big fan of the show, big fan of the White Sox, Southsider. And you know I don't recommend people that I don't trust. I trust this guy. 708-481-4500. Give him a call today. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Average annual per household savings based on a 2019 national survey by State Farm of new policyholders who reported savings by switching to State Farm. The White Sox have made some switches to their roster. They sent a lot of guys either minor league camp or optioned directly to AAA or AA on Friday. They added Brad Keller to the team. We have another Royal. I don't know how many are left. I still haven't seen Zach Greinke join the team, and he was one of the few that I thought made an awful lot of sense. But instead, they got another guy for batting practice. Brad Keller's terrible. I mean, this guy's bad. Isn't this the guy, too, that like had such a beef with Tim Anderson and the White Sox over the last couple of years? What are we saying here? Is this like a direct way of saying that things have changed here? And that's why it's okay to bring in Brad Keller? Because you're not bringing him in for his skill level. And I'm sorry, he's probably a wonderful person. I say it all the time when I'm like, a guy isn't very good at baseball. But there's a reason he's on a minor league contract. And I think the only reason he's here is because he's a former Royal. Somebody in the brain trust that Chris Getz trust, because he needs that comfort around him, said, hey, I've seen this guy before. We might as well bring him in here. He's an arm. I don't know if we'll ever hear about him again. I just think it's funny the amount of former Royals they're on this team. As for the guys that got optioned, Oscar Colas is the guy that headlines everything. And that makes sense. I think if you've been listening to the show, you know that that makes sense. I did find it interesting they had him working out at first base, and it'll be interesting to see if in AAA you see him play first base as well. I'm curious to see if that experiment continues. But it does show that the White Sox are being smart. It's all about versatility. You know, if you're going to try to figure out if there's ever a spot for a guy, how many positions can he play? But Colas' biggest problem is, if he ever gets another chance at the majors again, will he be able to adjust to major league pitching quicker and actually do the things that he was doing in the minor leagues that got him promoted in the first place originally? Because he could not do that. Now, Davis Martin down to AAA, that makes sense. He's still hurt. He's probably not ready till midway through the year. I think he'll pitch on the major league staff before it's all over. Jose Rodriguez goes down to AAA. Sammy Peralta's down as well. The other options to AA, Cousin and Eater, two pitchers on their way down. Remember, Jake Eater was the guy acquired when they traded Jake Berger away. And when I say they, I mean the fools that were running things before Chris Getz took over. Then six guys went to minor league camp. No surprises. Not at all. Kai Bush amongst them. Edgar Caro, he's eventually probably going to be the starting catcher in a year or two, but he's not ready yet. couple of pitchers. Adam Hackenberg went there. There isn't really a surprise on this. I think if you're surprised that Colas moved on, you haven't been paying attention. But now they've kind of cut things down a little bit more. The big surprises, I think, are going to come on the next round of cuts. And one thing that I still think is a possibility is that Michael Kopech ends up in the bullpen. He had another start. And again, I don't know if it was the most effective of starts. He tends to be a guy that needs a lot of pitches. But there was something in his answers to the press afterwards and in the way that those that are decision makers around the team are talking. And it just feels like they keep suggesting that, you know, he could be in the bullpen. And even Kopech talking about the idea of, like, he just wants to do whatever he can to help the team win. And we had James Fox on, remember, on the last episode. And if you missed it, go back and listen to it anywhere podcasts can be found and always at SoxInTheBasement.com. And the idea that Garrett Crochet may get his shot in the rotation. And if Garrett Crochet is going to get his shot in the rotation and he's not going to go deep in the games, you got to have somebody who can piggyback, and it's probably Chris Flexen. But if Kopech is also going to be a starter, then you kind of have to have Tukey around as well. And then you're piggybacking with two pitchers, because neither one of those guys give me confidence that they're going past the sixth inning, that they're even completing six innings and getting a quality start. They're more than likely 4 1/3 innings pitched. Maybe they finish five innings. Maybe. And you don't want to do that in a bunch of spots in your rotation. Now, on the other hand, you see Nastrini pitching well. And I know he's a long shot to make it coming out of camp. But if he keeps pitching really well, if they keep seeing something with him, if everybody else is looking effective, and the only real question is, could this kid slide in there? Maybe. I think the White Sox are a far more effective team with a guy like Michael Kopech coming out of the bullpen. I mean, forget about Flexen too. Think about what you build, what kind of pitcher you have. If Crochet starts and then Kopech comes in and pitches from the other side with that nastiness, between the two of them, you could get a very effective three innings out of each and build a really effective six-inning pitcher. And as the season goes on, if Crochet can get through the fourth inning effective and into the fifth, well, now all of a sudden you could probably pitch them both and have the closer come walking in at the end. I know that, like, all the national people, like, you go to FanGraphs and they'll put up, like, here's the expected rotation. You know, Kopech is not listed as the fifth starter. He's, like, in the middle. And you see a lot of the mainstream media covering it. It's the same way. But I think this is the guy that it's still, I don't think, is determined. I think it's just as up in the air as to what Crochet's role is going to be as what Kopech's role is going to be. I only say it because of his comments after the last start, where it just seemed like he understood that it wasn't set in stone. He feels like he's effective. He's throwing his pitches for strikes. He's willing to do whatever it takes to help the team win. That makes me feel like there's been discussions. I still believe there's no way he makes it to the All-Star break and he's still a starter on this team. Maybe he shocks me. Again, I would love it if he shocked me. Shocked the hell out of me, man. I think one of the shocking things you also may see before the year is over is that this Deloach, the other outfielder that they got from Seattle, you see him in the B game against the Dodgers, and the B game had Tyler Glasnow on the mound, and everybody else was getting mowed down, and that kid was just collecting solid hits into the gap, out into the outfield. He's got potential. You look at some of the trades that have been made, not only by Getz, but even the one at the end where Han made his deal. First of all, think about he got the return for Giolito when he deals him, and then look at what he gets when he makes those trades with the Dodgers, and he gets back Leisure, who's probably going to make the team, and look at how Nastrini's pitching. I mean, it is easier to trade talent for prospects than to do some of the more intricate things that a general manager needs to do. So trust me, I'm not sitting there saying that the guy was a genius, and I'm not crediting him with anything if there's eventually a parade and maybe one or two of these guys are still on this roster years from now. Not a chance. But it has been interesting to see what they've gotten back in deals. Watch out for that Deloach kid, too. I love it. I right now, I'm feeling good because I'm supposed to feel good. It's spring. hope springs eternal in spring. Every day I seem to get a phone call from Dad, and he's not looking at the negatives. He's like, you see that one guy get the hit? You see how they're hustling? You see how they're taking the extra base? You see how Aloy's hitting the ball? If all these guys can just stay healthy, if they just play the game the right way, anything could happen, and that's what I'm waiting for. I'm going to go into this season in the most no-pressure way possible. My son, Dominic, played hockey for years, ever since he was a little kid. Loves playing hockey. Good little hockey player, too. And this year, got a little disillusioned. Didn't think things were going the way that they probably should have. He was paying for his own hockey, and he made the decision to hang up the skates. Now, when he would play and they would lose a game, or he would go into a game, he was so intense. Every loss hurt. Every game that mattered really mattered to him. Super competitive kid. Now looking for a new sport, he has since joined the Brother Ice water polo team. He has no idea what the rules are for water polo. I talked to the coach, and that's a storied program. They've won so many championships. And they're teaching Dominic how to play water polo because he's a good swimmer. He's smart enough to like read a field, right? Like he could read the ice. He knew where the pass was going to go. He knows how to move things around. So if he can swim and he doesn't have to use a stick and a puck, he can just use his arm and like, you know, a water polo ball. And he's converting very quickly. He's played his first couple of games. And I just see the coach talking to him constantly like, okay, next time, this is what you do. But he's sitting there and he's soaking it all up. But what I see of him now is just the pure joy of playing a sport. Because the pressure's off. Because there are no expectations for him personally. Because if he screws up, he knows he's putting his absolute best effort into it. But he knows that he doesn't know everything yet. That he's a work in progress. That may be how you view White Sox baseball this year. It's a work in progress. You could be angry with the owner, but let's be honest, the guy that's in there right now who's a GM has only had a couple of months to put things together. You got a lot of really interesting storylines. You got some interesting guys that are going to be joining the team. You got Colson Montgomery coming along here in a little bit. You're going to see some guys that were from the old group that were supposed to be the core probably be off this team in the next 12 months. Unless all of a sudden the promises that were never delivered on get delivered on in a big way. A huge way. And you can kind of relax a little bit and enjoy the game for what it is. That's my wish for you this season, because that's how I'm kind of looking at it right now. Like a kid that joined a brand new sport, is learning the rules as he goes, and is just enjoying the act of being in there, because anything can happen.
Socks in the basement. Socks in the basement. Socks in the basement.
Socks in the basement. Heard everywhere a podcast can be found, and always on socksinthebasement.com.